good evening and welcome to Town Square. As we like to say each week, this conversation includes you. And if you'd like to join us, our phone lines are open at 941-3689. If you call us from Oahu, that's the number to use, 941-3689. And from the neighbor islands, 877-941-3689. That number also works if you're listening to the live stream from any place else and want to join us too. Now, even before the start of the legislative session in January, homelessness seemed to be on everyone's lips. It was also on the list of top priorities for lawmakers, and with good reason, given the often repeated statistic that Hawaii has the highest homeless population per capita in the nation. With more than half of the session now over, how are outreach workers, service providers, the ecumenical community, and the state's coordinator on homelessness assessing what's happened so far? And meanwhile, how are they gauging how each island is working to counter its own brand of homelessness? Tonight, we're going to find out with our panel and with you. State Coordinator on Homelessness, Scott Morishige, joins us. He is the former executive director of the nonprofit Focused. Also here is Mark Gannon. He's the vice president of community impact at Aloha United Way, and he is the chair of Partners in Care. His counterpart, on the neighbor islands is Maud Cumming. She is the chair of Bridging the Gap, the Housing and Urban Development Continuum of Care on the neighbor islands. And the Reverend David Gerlach is also here. He is the rector of St. Elizabeth's Episcopal Church in Palama and a member of both Faith Action for Community Equity, otherwise known as FACE, and the Housing Now Coalition. He's also the former chair of the Hawaii Public Housing Authority Board of Directors and a licensed attorney and a part-time family court judge. There you have our panel. Of course, you're here too. Again, our numbers are 941-3689 and 877-941-3689. Welcome to all of you, and thank you for making time to join us.
Thank you.
Thank you. Good evening.
Maud, I'm going to start with you. You're out there on the neighbor islands and taking a look at what you see as you look back at Oahu and judge so far where we are in this legislative session. How would you peg that?
Well, I see that there's a number of bills related to housing first, shallow rent. There's one that I'm concerned about, which is the House Bill 2559, I think it is, relating to some emergency shelter conditions. But overall, while those are great starts, I really had wished that there was more emphasis on developing affordable housing, that kind of emphasis, because we can outreach, we can provide shelters, but unless we have permanent housing that's affordable, where is it going to go? Where are we going to put people? What's going to be the next step?
All right, we're going to talk about some of those because SB 2561 is still alive, and that has that goal of creating 22,500 affordable rental housing units. When we're talking about that a little bit later, but I want to continue with our panel. Mark, bring this back to Oahu. As you are looking at the session and what's been happening with it, how do you see it?
Well, Bethann, it changes from week to week and perhaps even day to day. As you know, we're at an exciting point right now in the ledge session. I think there's a lot of interest in homelessness this year for a number of reasons. It's certainly a very visible issue. It affects all members of our community and visitors to our islands. And I think setting policy is an important strategy, but I think we need to be very mindful of all the other parts of the solution that range far beyond setting policy at a state level.
All right, which sort of brings us to you, Reverend Gerlach. If we're looking at different parts of the community, not just government-driven, but what's happening within the faith-based community, would you say that the faith-based community is deeply involved, and what would you like to see?
I think that many in the faith-based community are deeply involved. FACE and the Housing Now Coalition are made up primarily of church groups. But this isn't a problem that church groups can fix. We can be a stopgap in the community. We can provide shelters. We can provide meals. We can provide bathroom facilities. But as my friend in Maui just said, we really need to build affordable housing. And this is an area that our government has neglected for at least the last 20 years. And the chickens have come home to roost. The faith-based community sees this as a moral outrage. And for many of us, it is a sin. It's an affront against God, and it's an affront against human dignity for families, children, babies sleeping on sidewalks in the United States of America. It's beyond shocking, and it's a disgrace. And my hope is that this legislative session will take very seriously the need to confront this problem in a meaningful way. We've had enough political talk. We really do need action.
Which brings us to you, Scott Morishige, as you have now been in this position for, 6 months or so?
Yes, about 7.5 months now.
That's why that was the or so. Having just heard what David Gerlach said, having just heard what Mark Gannon and Maude Cumming have been talking about, and these are the same issues that we've been talking about for a very long time, but now looking at it from your position with the state, and also, as someone who comes in and asks the legislature to really pay attention to some of those needs, is there enough interplay happening between the states in terms of the state in terms of what you're doing and also what is happening with lawmakers? Is there enough conversation and understanding that's leading to the action that Reverend Gerlach wants?
Well, I think we've had really good dialogue with both representatives from the House as well as the Senate. I agree with what Maude and Reverend Gerlach said about the need for housing. And if you're really going to address the issue of homelessness, we need to invest in housing. And the administration in the executive budget asked for over $131 million to repair our public housing units that are currently vacant because they're in disrepair, to add money to the rental housing revolving fund so that we can build more affordable rental inventory. Unfortunately, we didn't see as much funding provided for that in the House version of the budget, but we know that the Senate is hearing the budget bill early next week, and we're hopeful that the dialogue is still continuing because we're only really at a little bit past the halfway point of the session so far. So we're very hopeful. We're also hopeful that there's a number of bills still live that support many of the administration's priorities to address homelessness, which in particular would expand the capacity to address homelessness not only here on Oahu, but on the neighbor islands, because we know this is a statewide issue, and we really need to pay proper attention to having necessary resources not only here in Honolulu, but in every part of the state as well.
Each island has sort of a different brand of homelessness, though, and what may work on Oahu may not necessarily work on the Big Island. As you look island to island, and Maude, especially as you are out there on the neighbor islands and talking to a lot of the outreach providers, what do you think about the character of the neighbor island's homelessness versus what we think about it on Oahu, so that it too is looked at in a meaningful way and addressed as such?
Well, we don't have the same kinds of situations as I've seen on Oahu, where a lot of the homeless are very visible and right out there, and you can see them, and they're congregated in areas that maybe might make it easier for outreach workers to visit. Ours are very, they're in pockets, in bushes, in very out-of-the-way places. And so outreach has to go quite a ways to see people, to find out where they're at, and they're quite mobile as well. And so we are, they're not in very visible areas. There are a few, but mostly they're tucked away in bushes and fields where you have to really search them out, and so that's a little different, and so I guess proportionately, we don't have a lot of housing, but proportionately, if you compared it to the population on Oahu, it probably percentage wise come out to the same kind of thing, but we do have to really hunt out people.
Do you feel that the way in which homelessness is being viewed per se is taking into account a lot of the differences that, that you see, or is homelessness becoming too much of an Oahu-centric issue?
There are many days when I feel like it is Oahu-centric, and so I try to have a voice in things and really make sure that we are heard and represented as well.
Well, speaking of being represented, we already have the phones lighting up. If you'd like to join us and you're just tuning into Town Square tonight, we're doing a sort of a status report on homelessness and how the session has developed thus far, what you see in it that's working or maybe not working, and if you're on a neighbor island, how you feel about homelessness on your island and whether or not that's really being looked at effectively. Our number is 941-3689 or 877-941-3689 if you call us from the neighbor islands. We're going now to Dave calling us from Kaneohe. Aloha, Dave, and thank you for your patience.
Hi. I have a surefire way at a tiny price, but it has to be dedicated by the legislator. They can do it for a fraction of the millions and millions that they think that they're going to get a little housing started by utilizing tiny housing, where a lot of folks would be really happy to be in, and you can have those for about $20,000 to $30,000, and have plots of land that maybe cost another $30,000 or $40,000, and you can even have a little mortgage. And in Hawaii, that's perfect place, the perfect because of our weather and everything. You don't need a lot of space, indoor space. And one more point, I think we have to start thinking of housing as a human right, an absolute human right that everybody is entitled to, period. Because you know what? This is costing us a fortune having housing. It would be better to invest in this kind of stuff than the huge expenditures we're going through to keep people homeless.
All right. Thank you, Dave, very much for the call. Echoes of what Reverend Gerlach had to say a moment ago about it being deplorable that we allow these conditions to go on for families and children to sleep on the sidewalk. But he also was talking about the tiny house movement. And we've talked about this before, Scott Morshige. What's happening now with tiny houses, and where is the state with using that idea, if not tiny houses per se, but the idea of container small houses, aside from what's happening on Sand Island?
Well, I think we're looking at really utilizing micro units as a way to build more permanent housing in a more cost-efficient manner. And I think what's really exciting is we're starting to see some of those projects come to fruition. Actually, on the neighbor islands in West Hawaii, in Kona, there's a micro unit project that's targeted specifically at chronically homeless individuals. It will be a permanent supportive housing project, which is estimated to come online in October of this year. And it was part of what's helped it to come online more quickly is the emergency proclamation, which Governor Ige issued earlier last fall. And so it's a positive sign that it's helped to accelerate some of those efforts that not only address the short-term aspects of homelessness, but really help to bring up more permanent inventory. Because again, as everyone's mentioned, I think for us to really address the problem, we really need to invest in the housing solution.
And Dave's point being that the cost to keep putting people through the same revolving doors of homelessness would be a lot more than perhaps would be a unit that would be $20,000 or $30,000. Even if it's tiny, it's a place that somebody can call home and feel safe.
Yes, but I think another point I wanted to mention, though, is it's not just about building more housing. I think some of what I've seen is that we also need to increase access to some of the inventory that we already have. So aside of what we're doing in a legislative session, the administration really has been working with the community to really educate landlords so that we can maximize housing vouchers for Section 8 and other programs that assist homeless individuals with rental subsidies that really are being underutilized. I actually had an opportunity to visit with Maud and her organization in November, I believe, in Maui, and she actually took me into the bushes about almost a mile in, and we met an encampment there, and many of the individuals in that encampment had Section 8 vouchers, but the challenge that they were having is that they really couldn't find a landlord that was willing to accept a voucher. They were having difficulty finding a unit. So in addition to legislation to build more housing, what we're doing is partnering with the Hawaii Association of Realtors, partnering with the counties to convene landlord summits in every part of the state. So we had one in the fall here in Honolulu. We had two in on Hawaii Island, one in East Hawaii, one in West Hawaii earlier this year. And I know Bridging the Gap on Maui is actually in the process of planning one in Maui County, hopefully within the next few months.
From the start, when we had the first Landlord Summit in November, the hope was to be able to roll it out across the islands, as you've just talked about. But from that initial one, have you seen any changes in the way that landlords are approaching Section 8 vouchers?
Well, I think that we've been able to strengthen some of the relationships between the service providers and landlords, and I think we have a better understanding of what some of the key barriers are. So as we're looking at bringing new programs online, like Housing First or Rapid Rehousing, for example, one of the things that we're hearing from landlords is that we need to include landlord incentives such as damage guarantees in our programming as part of the program. So we're building those in. We're taking in the feedback that we're receiving from landlords, and that's really helping us better understand what the need is.
For all of you, as you've just been hearing what we've been talking about, just not with micro units, but trying to maximize the units that we have, how much would it really take at this point? Do we have an idea? Do any of you have an idea about what might happen? Could there be any sort of adoption of a particular block of units or anything to be able to get some of these online in a more creative sort of way than waiting for a big bunch of money to come plop down to be able to fix it? Is there anything happening that either of you know about, or Maude, you too, that might mean that the private sector is looking at this a little differently other than just development to put up quote-unquote affordable housing?
I think there are a number of solutions that our community needs to consider and vet fully. What the caller made a point about, I think, is really critical, is that addressing homelessness is not only the compassionate thing to do, it's a very fiscally appropriate thing to do. And if we can find solutions that are not only smart from a business sense, but also touch people in a way that changes their lives and helps people get back onto a track of success for the future, those are the solutions that work. But it's not a simple solution that works for all. And that's why this complex problem is so difficult to resolve. It's a complex problem. It resolves a very complex solution. Housing, yes, that's key. But we need to be very mindful of allocating the appropriate resource with the need and not providing intensive case management, long-term supportive housing options to people that only need shallow rental subsidy assistance, for example. So those solutions where it's not only fiscally smart but also compassionate are the best solutions.
You're making a case for making sure that this is well organized and well coordinated, which in some ways it really hasn't been in the past, despite having an instrument that people use that's now standardized. You're just talking about having a whole system that's far better networked. Maude, you were going to jump in on that last question.
Yes, I think that I've done a lot of research on, you know, so many different options, and one of the things is looking at was the state of Utah's response, you know, Lloyd Pendleton. And he said, you know, we're never going to build our way out of this. We have to acquire our way out of this. Because I believe that there is a stock of underutilized properties that can be converted for a fairly reasonable cost. We're looking at several buildings right now. We have already taken two buildings. One of them was already apartments, but the other one had a few apartments and storage and commercial units, but it's very underutilized. So for a little over $1 million, we are able to convert that. And there are pockets of buildings, I believe, all over that we can be converted. If we wait to build our way out of it, we'll be 10 years out. But if we acquire and do rehab, we could effectively increase the stock. Unfortunately, there's a lot of I come across a lot of building code issues. We would never do anything that does it. Is it safe? But there's a lot of regulatory issues that have to be overcome. And so it still takes a long time. But I believe that that's one of the solutions that maybe we need to fund better and look at rather than waiting for building.
If you're just joining us tonight on Town Square, that was Maud Cummings. She is the chair of Bridging the Gap, which is the continuum of care on the neighbor islands. We're taking a look at homelessness in Hawaii as we're now better than halfway through the legislative session and what our panel and what you see in terms of action on homelessness and actions to come, both what you've been watching, if you've been watching the bills moving through the legislature, and also what you're seeing in your own communities. We want to hear from you. 941-3689 is the number to use if you're on Oahu. 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. Reverend Gerlach, this sort of reminds me of this idea of, you know, start where you are, use what you have, make sure that you're using your resources the best way that you can before you start to add more onto it. But this seems also to be a situation where it has to be going in both directions at once. We haven't been really good about that.
Well, when we talk about coordinating and working together, I suppose that probably the most disappointing circumstance right now in my mind is what's happening in city government here in Honolulu. Because just trying to get the administration and city council to coordinate and work together on this very intense issue has been, it's kind of been a tragedy to watch. You know, the mayor asked for money that he could use to pay private developers to build affordable housing. The council gave him $64 million, but said the city's got to own and operate it. So the mayor said, that's fine, but give me staff so that I have people who can actually spend the money properly. And, you know, and the council chair hands the mayor a box of napkins and says, you know, don't drown yourself in your tears. You ain't getting it. I don't understand how that can happen with the crisis that we're facing. And the other is that we obviously need infrastructure. Iwilei is one of the areas that is everybody's looking at in terms of building affordable housing, but it desperately needs infrastructure repair. And just last week, several members of the council are talking about yanking funding for that. These are the kinds of things that seem to be playing for politics rather than solutions. And we're not living in a society that can tolerate that right now.
Scott Morshiga, how well do you think the state is working with the city and vice versa?
Well, I think certainly we're collaborating together. We both understand that what the issues are, that we need to not only develop more affordable housing, but we need to invest in services. So the city and state both have been looking at evidence-based practices that we know work, such as Housing First, which really are effective in addressing chronic homelessness. We're also looking at a range of other strategies. I think with the items that Reverend Gerlach mentioned with infrastructure in Kalihi, I think that really has been a priority for Governor Ige's administration as well. And when we put together executive budget, we actually included $25 million for something called the Dwelling Unit Revolving Fund to specifically address those infrastructure issues. Because we've, in addition, you know, to working on the budget, working on legislation, we've been talking to people in the community, to developers, to other stakeholders. What they've told us is infrastructure costs are a huge barrier. So we need to invest in that as well as invest in services. But I think the city is working on those issues in a similar way as the state is. And because, again, we both have mutual areas of interest where we both see what the issues are and we both see what needs to be done.
A few weeks ago, I was fortunate enough to be able to do insights for PBS Hawaii. And we were talking about where we were at Crossover. And I was really amazed at how many questions kept coming at us about the issue of homelessness, and with many different perceptions of, well, why are you putting all this money into housing? Why don't you do something to help people get jobs? I mean, just some really basic things, but so varied that it made me wonder if there really is an understanding of how people become homeless and what's happening with the various homeless populations and why people seem to feel this need for venting their anger at people who are homeless, and where we can go as a community when you have such disparate views.
Well,
Reverend Gerlach.
The newspaper headline just the other day said that nearly half of us are one small crisis away from financial disaster, that half of us can't afford an unexpected car repair, that many, many of us are having trouble paying the electric bill and sometimes even putting food on the table. So yes, there is incredible income disparity in our community. Many of the folks who I know who live at Kakaako Park leave early in the morning and come home late in the evening where they're working at minimum wage jobs, and they're only bringing home enough to afford that tent on the sidewalk. So that has to change, too. We have to pay a minimum guaranteed livable wage to people. We really need to take a new look at how we've organized ourselves as a society. These last 30 years have seen a very few get very rich and mostly everybody else go backwards or stay in place. And we can't sustain a society that way.
Anybody else want to tackle the issue of perceptions and not necessarily syncing with the realities that you see?
From the perspective of Partners in Care, which is a coalition of service providers as well as government agencies, other advocates, funders, et cetera, focusing on coordinating services and coordinating strategies for the island of Oahu, I couldn't agree more. There must be more emphasis on prevention. It is not a single-pronged solution. There are multiple ways to address homelessness, and a lot of times we focus on the symptom of homelessness and not on some of the root causes. And I think that's an important piece that as a community we need to address.
All right, we're going to see what some in our community have to say. Going to Ron, calling us from Kihei. Aloha, Ron, and thank you for your patience.
Hello.
Hi there.
I want to address, I live in Kihei. I'm intimately familiar with the homeless problem. Within walking distance of my house, I probably know 30 people that are homeless, half of which have full-time jobs, and for years. And a good percentage of them have drug problems that need to be addressed. But there's a good third of them that they don't want, they like being homeless, and for whatever reasons. And what I don't see being addressed is their health issues. I can walk over to the park right now and see 8 or 10 people that have MRSA or staph or respiratory diseases, and it's a revolving door between the emergency room, the jail, and the park. And I have suggested this over and over to any number of people that if we had a roving medical team that just served MRSA and staph infections, that'd be a first step to getting some of the most chronic people that have been on the streets for years.
All right, Ron, hold it there for a second, because I want to bring Maude Cumming back into the conversation, because this is, after all, the neighbor island issue. Maude, what do you have to say when he says that, you know, we need to have roving docs and nurses?
Well, I agree with him that there is that issue. I have personally taken, I don't know how many people to the emergency room because they have no regular doctor. So they utilize the emergency room as their source of medical care, and it overwhelms the system. And sometimes our outreach has to stay there to advocate in order for the person to get treatment, because they've been there so many times. It does get wearisome. So we'll stay there to ensure they get medical treatment. We cannot, there was a time when there were, I believe Salvation Army had a nurse, But because of the requirements, the medical requirements, the certifications, they could no longer sustain that. And she's absolutely right. We do need medical care out there. I don't see any funding for that. But it has to not only be medical care, but a whole system of support.
All right. If you're just joining us now, we're talking about the status of homelessness, and not just because we're better than halfway through the legislative session, but because it's still an issue and probably one in your neighborhood, too. 941-3689 is our number if you call us from Oahu, or 877-941-3689 if you call us from the neighbor islands. We've yet to really talk about the issue of mental illness, as this is all playing into homelessness. Yes, there are the families, the people who are needing a little bit of a help to be able to make the rent. Yes, there are those who are chronically homeless because of drug and alcohol problems, but that's also very often in conjunction with mental health. Mental health seems to very often be the stepchild, and we talk about it, but we don't necessarily talk about it enough and integrate it into the same way that we talk about physical health problems. Has there been any relief in your minds as you look at homelessness in terms of how mental health is delivered and mental health care is delivered, and what that means for the overall issue of, if not ending homelessness, but countering it?
Well, you know, 50 years ago, we changed mental health models and emptied the state hospitals. And the promise was is that we would erect community mental health centers for people to get medications and psychiatric treatment as needed. And we never fulfilled that promise. And so folks were basically sent out of the hospitals onto the streets without ready access to psychiatric treatment or medications. And we still haven't done that. We don't have nearly enough community-based mental health clinics for folks in need to be served. And that's a promise that we have not kept for 50 years, and we see the results.
Has there been any progress at all in terms of the judiciary and the Department of Health in being, you know, providing supportive services to expedite the most vulnerably mentally ill and get them into treatment?
Well, I think a couple of years ago there was a bill that passed something called the Assisted Community Treatment Act, which is what I think that you're referring to. And I know that there's been a couple cases, I think, where a third party or service provider has petitioned the court to try and link a homeless person in need to mental health treatment. But there's been difficulties in kind of navigating that judicial system. So I believe that there's a number of working groups that are kind of looking at that to kind of figure out how to kind of better fix that process. But in the meantime, how we're providing services to those in need with both mental health as well as physical health concerns is through homeless outreach providers such as MOD's organization, Family Life Center on Maui, and many of the other members and partners in care. And I think not a lot of people really understand the critical role that outreach plays. You know, outreach providers are the people who go out into every part of the community to meet people who are unsheltered, who are dealing with serious physical health concerns, with really bad cellulitis, who may not be able to get up off the street, with people who have really severe mental health and issues, and make the connections for those people so that they can get into a home, into a rental unit if that's possible, or if they need a higher level of care, to connect them to a care home facility or a nursing facility where they can get the level of treatment that they need. Unfortunately, we just don't have enough resources to have enough outreach workers to meet the level of need in the community. One of the things that I'm hopeful about is that there's a number of bills in the legislature right now that would provide increased funding for homeless outreach, especially on the neighbor islands in rural areas where I think there's a really big gap. And that would help. Our hope is that that would fill some of the unmet need for what the caller was referencing, where you could have a outreach team that has a nurse on staff, you could have outreach team that has a psychiatrist on staff to be able to handle some of these more complex issues that we're starting to see in the field right now.
What about the role of Adult Protective Services in getting mentally ill folks into treatment?
I think that they play a role as well. you know, we work really closely with the Department of Human Services and staff from Adult Protective Services as well as Child Welfare Services to be able to respond to some of these issues. I think the outreach workers and staff from Adult Protective Services branch work hand in hand. There was a situation in Waikiki really recently where there was someone who really was not able to care for themselves. And really, the outreach workers from a service provider worked with our APS, Adult Protective Services, social workers to get this person into care and be able to get them the type of support that they need. And, you know, one thing we're trying to do is to better coordinate with service providers and the state agencies that provide that type of help so that we can see those types of partnerships happen more often.
If you want to talk about homeless tonight, that's exactly what we're doing on Town Square, taking a look at where we are right now, both with some of the bills still moving at the legislature, as well as what's happening in communities across Hawaii, including yours. 941-3689 and 877-941-3689 are our numbers. If you'd like to be part of the conversation, the phone lines are open, and we're going now to Yukiko calling us from Kahului. Aloha and welcome to Town Square.
Hi, Aloha. Thank you so much for taking my call. And just listening to all the, you know, the facts today, I can see so many different populations and also different, all sorts of different demographics. And I have one point that I really need to find out relates to the homelessness care. Which is, I hear from so many different sources that in the mainland states, some of the states send the homeless people with a one-way airplane ticket. And it wasn't just only one source I heard of, and I'd like to know if that's true or not.
Okay,
it's true, no matter how we try, we need to control that part as well, otherwise keep coming, and what can we do for the local people?
Yukiko, yes. I'm going to stop you right there because this is a question that always surfaces every time we talk about homelessness, and there are numbers affixed to how many people actually come here from elsewhere who wind up homeless. Scott, can you give some of those numbers?
Well, I want to say that, you know, I've been doing this type of work for a long time, even before working for the government, and in my 15 years of working with the homeless population, I've never heard of another state actually sending somebody here. So I think that's a rumor that somehow got started and is very common, but I've never heard of another state actually sending another person here. What I do know is that there's many individuals that choose to come to Hawaii and due to circumstances sometimes get stranded here. And that number is actually much smaller than most people think. When you look at the overall homeless population, only about 10% are new arrivals from the mainland.
We've also talked to IHS, where they've said, too, that people, when you talk about getting stranded here, they may come here because they had a job offer here. They came here on a mission of love with a spouse or a girlfriend, a boyfriend, and that fell through. Or they simply were here and lost their job or had an illness and something else catastrophic happened. There are lots of different reasons that somebody may fall into it and not necessarily come here because they decide it's cooler to be okay and on the beach and homeless in Hawaii, and trying to get that message out also to people through whatever the mainland version is of the Coconut Wireless, that this is not the place to be, is also something that they've been trying to do for a while.
Yes, but and that gets us to the real tragedy of this crisis, because most of the folks, as Scott's numbers show, are our local people. And many, many of those are our host people, the Native Hawaiian people, who are without shelter.
Native Hawaiian and also Pacific Islander.
Pacific Islanders as well. And with respect to the Pacific Islanders, one group that is noticeably silent when it comes to this issue, particularly with our friends from the Micronesian countries and the Marshall Islands, is the Defense Department. They have carte blanche over that part of the world. The primary reason that folks come from there to here is for medical care and education for their kids, because they don't have either of those with any kind of quality back home.
And that was the whole point of COFA.
The Defense Department does nothing to help the state of Hawaii with this migrant population who are allowed to be here, and rightly so. We destroyed their culture and their homes and their islands with our atomic testing many years ago. But the Defense Department is in a position, I think, to step up and be of assistance here in Hawaii, because they have so much, they have so many assets here. And as a practical matter, they're about the only ones who get anything done in Washington. It's about the only thing that people can agree on funding in Washington. And I'm curious as to why the Defense Department has not stepped up to assist, particularly our friends from that part of the world here with the problems that they need.
Scott, have you heard of any other exchanges between the state and the DOD?
Not specifically with Department of Defense, but I know that, you know, the state really has been working on reaching out to the nations of the compact, to, you know, the Marshall Islands, the Federated States of Micronesia, and really trying to better dialogue with the community to understand some of the issues. Well, I also know that the U.S. Department of the Interior has provided some funding for an organization, We're Oceania, to get started, to really be able to reach out to that community, have people from the community kind of help to address some of the issues that that population is seeing right now.
All right. We've got others in our community who are reaching out and want to talk to all of you. Going now to Renee calling from Waianae. And if you'd like to be next, 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. Aloha, Renee. Thank you for your patience.
Thank you. My concern is I did hear on the news that they had states providing a one-way ticket to Hawaii. But then a lot of our people, I mean, they may be Hawaiian, but they may be like a few hundred dollars over the limit and they don't qualify, so they become homeless. Our pay rate, who can afford $100,000 or $200,000 house mid wage? That's why they're homeless.
Renee, we're having a really difficult time hearing you. So sorry, the line is just breaking up, but you know, again, this idea that somehow these one-way tickets. Now, there have been one-way tickets from Hawaii to get people who have been stranded here home. That was a program that was being run by IHS, but that is a very different story than people sending their homeless folks to Hawaii. Going to go now to Christine calling us from Kauai. Again, our number is 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. Aloha, Christine. Welcome to Town Square.
Aloha, thank you. Yeah, I just have two questions related to landlord practices that I believe to be discriminatory and that I've also seen to be rampant on Kauai. My first question is it legal for landlords to list no HUD or no Section 8 in housing listings? And is it legal for landlords to demand cash-only payments? And I'll take the answers off the air. Thank you.
All right, thanks very much. I'm watching some heads shake here. Who wants to answer her?
Well, I would say, you know, there are resources that can help to answer those types of questions that you might have about the landlord-tenant code. The state has a landlord-tenant hotline that you can call that can provide information. Also, the Legal Aid Society of Hawaii provides assistance statewide for individuals experiencing those types of issues who may have those questions and wondering, you know, is this legal, is this not? And they can actually be contacted, both of those resources, by calling the 211. And that's a number you can call from any part of the state, and then they can give you information about those organizations that can help answer some of those questions that you have.
Reverend Gerlach, you're an attorney, though, but I mean, does that sound like that? You know, do you have any fluency with this at all, that this is something that someone cannot be asking for? No, you know, cash payments only or
yeah.
No vouchers?
I've learned not to give legal advice over the air, and it's not something that I know off the top of my head.
All right. I'd rather not
speculate. I think Scott's points were very well taken.
Well, for those of you listening, maybe there is one of you who is an attorney who knows that answer. Give us a call, 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. Looking at how communities are responding to all of this, I know that, Reverend Gerlach, you've been saying a couple of things. A, the faith community needs to step up far more than it has been and to truly express outrage, but to express it in the political forum and not just talk to each other about it. And also that the housing issue has to be center in all of that, that this has to be more than just a conversation about getting people temporary stopgap services, letting people stay in your parking lot overnight, use your toilet facilities, being able to have them move from one house of worship to another, for example, Family Promise, but really look at long-term issues. How reticent are communities and in particular congregations to do that?
You know, churches are, folks at church are no different than folks everywhere else. And I think for many people, there's a sense of not knowing what to do or how to go about it. And for many, there's a sense of fear about getting involved with folks who are houseless. But Jesus tells us that when we want to meet him, the place to meet him isn't necessarily in church or on your knees. It's when we feed the hungry and visit the sick and take care of those who are the least among us. And that's the place he tells us we will meet him. So the faith community is moving forward. We actually are planning a very large rally at the state legislature on April 21st. We hope to have many folks who are houseless join us, as well as members of our congregations and unions and so forth. And I'm thinking that probably the next thing that needs to happen if this legislative session does not take a serious and substantial step forward is that we need to start inviting the folks who are living at Kaka'ako Park and the Waianae Boat Harbor to take up a new residence at City Hall and on the grounds of the state capitol, so that the folks who can make the biggest difference most quickly can see on a daily basis whose lives are being impacted by the inaction that we have seen thus far.
You sound like you're calling for some of the major sit-in or tent-ins of a previous generation.
Well, I am of that previous generation, and it was effective. And my hope is that we don't need to do that. My fear is that, in fact, we do need to do it.
All right, we're going to go to take a few more of our callers. Going to Jordan, calling us from Kaneohe. Aloha. Welcome, and thank you for your patience.
Hello, yes, thank you for taking my call. I wanted to bring up in this discussion, you know, the inflation of our housing market from things such as military stipends and just flat-out greed, and if anything could be done to help bring that down, bring the cost of housing and living down here on Oahu.
I'm looking at everybody else who's looking at everybody else, thinking, and how do we talk about that? I mean, we know that we've had a lot of issues with how expensive it is to live in Hawaii and housing being at the center of that. And yet most of the projections are that this is a one-way ticket. This is going to keep on going. It's not going to get any better.
I think that one of the most exciting things, though, is taking a look at our state land resources and seeing what kind of state lands that we might have to be able to build on. 20 years ago, when the city was actively involved in building affordable housing out in the Ewa Plain, housing prices did stabilize. And folks who made police officer, firefighter, teacher salaries were and are able to afford those homes. And this isn't just a problem of folks who are houseless. It really is a problem for our middle class and our kids who are graduating college and then leaving for the mainland because they can't afford to buy here. So we need to increase inventory. And often when you increase inventory in a significant way, that does have a dampening effect on prices.
This is almost the identical conversation that I remember having 16 years ago when we first started Town Square. And it only seems to be compounded by the fact that our population has grown, and along with it, the escalation of a homeless population. Do any of you see that there is going to come a point where we really are at critical mass, or are we going to just see sort of, you know, some scattershot activities that are not as well coordinated as you have all made the case to be? Scott, you want to take that one
on? I think that we are starting to make progress, but I think what sometimes it's very difficult about this issue is that due to the complexity of homelessness, it is going to take time for us to be really able to address this. And when you look at what we need to do to address the issue, it's a pretty simple solution that we need to build more housing. We need to look at services to help those who are especially vulnerable to make sure that they're getting the right level of service to help them maintain their housing once they're able to get in. And we've started to take the steps to make that happen. We're making significant levels of investment in affordable housing at the state level. The last couple of years, we've seen a big outlay of resources into the Rental Housing Trust Fund, now known as the Rental Housing Revolving Fund, to help make that happen. We've seen an increase in just knowledge about programs like Housing First, as well as an increase in funding for Housing First programs. So I think we're starting to make some steps in the right direction, but this is something that's going to take time. The issue of homelessness to get to the point where we are today, it didn't happen overnight. It happened over several years. And I think our path out of this situation is going to be the same way. It is going to take time, but we are taking steps in the right direction. And I think we're investing in the things that we need to invest in.
And let me just follow up with what Scott said. And one of the reasons that this has been such a problem that's occurred over the last 20 years or so is that we used to require developers to include a certain percentage of whatever they built to be affordable.
And we still do.
Well, but
in
we don't.
Some way.
Well, we don't, because we redefined the term affordable to mean actually market rate.
And that's the point.
And we need government to step in and to say, developers, you're going to 20% of what you build is going to be really affordable, which means 60 to 80% of area median income is going to be able to afford 20% of your units if you want to build here. We've got building like crazy going up in Kakaako, and if you're a millionaire, you've got no problem having your pick of places. Government has to regulate in this area, and when we used to regulate in this area, we didn't have the problem we have today. We played games, and the developers got their way by redefining affordable to have no meaning at all. And inclusionary zoning, that's the word. That has to be part of the game now.
Go ahead, Dave. I'm sorry, Mark Gannon.
I'd like to echo that, but also add another perspective in that in addition to addressing this from a regulatory perspective, I think there's a way to engage developers in a very meaningful way. One example I'd like to share with you is a partnership between IHS, which is a partner, member of Partners in Care, as well as Queens Hospital. They partnered with HomeAid and a number of developers who very rapidly renovated a home in Kalihi. It's called Tutu Burt's House.
It opened today. We talked about this morning, right.
It's a terrific example of where multiple systems and multiple partners come together for a very specific and tangible project where it will cost a certain amount up front, but the savings long term to assist these patients that don't need hospital care but cannot be discharged into homelessness can really be the right thing to do and really save us as a community
and serve
resources.
As a model for other types of projects that aren't
model.
Necessarily for people who are coming out of hospital, but to be able to say that we need more public-private partnerships.
Certainly.
We've got lots of folks who are out in the public who are trying to get into our phone lines. We'll try to get through as many as we can in the next couple of minutes. Jody from Honolulu. Aloha and welcome to Town Square. Jody, you there?
Okay. Yes, I am. I'm sorry. Hello.
Okay, go
Aloha.
Ahead. Go ahead.
Hi. I had a question for the fellow, I guess it's one of your guests. He had mentioned that he thinks that the Department of Defense should get more involved in the homeless situation. I would like to kind of get a little bit more ideas of why he thinks that the Department of Defense should be responsible for getting involved in the homeless situation. Being a veteran myself, retired, I've been into those situations before. Never comes out good. So I'd kind of like to know where his mind frame is and why he thinks the Department of Defense should get involved in something we have really no control over.
Okay. Well, I mean, but very, very briefly, because I want to be able to see if we can get some more callers through that. Your point was that because of the Compact of Free Association, you were looking at this through the lens of taking care of Pacific Islanders, Micronesians who are here because they're trying to access health care and they're trying to access education.
Correct.
All right, we're going to leave it there and move on to Pedro calling us from Nu'uanu. Aloha, Pedro. Welcome to Town Square.
Aloha, and thank you to all your guests there. Very insightful panel. I wanted to know a little bit more. Scott had mentioned about the housing first model. It's been over a decade that the state had looked at this model. It's been very successful in other states, and the current mayor has at least in part said that they embraced the housing first model here. But I'd like to know the status and if we're making meaningful adoption. Are we moving towards meaningful adoption of the model here locally? And I'll take my answer offline. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Pedro, for the quick question and succinctly stated.
So I think that we're seeing huge progress for housing first model at the city and the state. The city's permanently housed about 120 people. The state has housed about a little under about 108, I believe. And we're looking at ways to bring that model to scale. We're trying to expand Housing First to the neighbor islands, and we're also looking at how we can partner with our state Medicaid office, the MedQuest division, to be able to do Housing First model sort of on a larger scale beyond the pilot that we've been working on for the past few years.
And that seems, though, to be working on some islands, but for example, on Maui, Mayor Alan Arakawa isn't really exactly thrilled about Housing First per se and is looking at other ways of being able to temporarily house homeless people.
Well, I think we've had a continuing dialogue with Mayor Arakawa and his administration, and I think that we're pushing to have Housing First expand statewide. One of our priority requests for in the executive budget before legislature right now is for an increased appropriation for Housing First to specifically allow us to expand the program not only to Maui but to Hawaii Island and Kauai as well.
All right, we're going to try to sneak Sandra calling from Maui here. Sandra, do you have a very quick question?
Yes, I do. I would like to ask the panel, how do you think that we can actually work on the stigma? Like, I'm a social worker. I have a lot of clients that do have their HUD vouchers, and renters do not consider them because
right.
they do have that. So
we're going to let Reverend Gerlach answer that question for you before we have to go.
Yeah, I think the government needs to be able to say to landlords, if they break it, we'll fix it. And if your rent's not paid in full, we'll make up for it. And if you've got a problem with a tenant, we'll have somebody there right away to deal with it. That's happening in different states around the nation. It's happening with the Hawaii Public Housing Authority, and it needs to happen on a broader level to give landlords that kind of comfort.
All right, we've got to go in just about a minute or so. I want to go right round here and just final thought of where you think we need to make some moves right now. Maude, we'll start with you. What's next on your list before we get to the end of session? Okay, well, Maude is thinking we'll go to Mark Gannon.
From the perspective of Partners in Care, we're looking at improving the capability and capacity of Partners in Care in working across various sectors, and I think it's going to involve all members of our community.
Reverend Gerlach?
The state and the city and county need to step up with significant financial sums and start building housing now. That's really what needs to happen.
Maude, are you there? I don't think she can hear me.
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, you're there. Just a very quick thought. What has to happen before the end of session? Really quickly.
We really need to beef up our coordinated entry system and increase the funding for housing, permanent housing.
All right. And Scott?
Well, just, you know, supporting a comprehensive strategy that looks at building more units as well as matching people to appropriate level of care.
All right, well, we got to leave it there. That's Town Square for tonight. I'm Beth Ann Kozlovich. I'll see you tomorrow morning right here at 8 o'clock for the conversation. Have yourselves a good evening. Aloha.